You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Good to be with you on this Friday afternoon. Beautiful day. As Dan was mentioning in the newscast, the temperatures are going to drop starting on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait.
You ready for the fall?
Yes.
I'm ready.
It's the middle of October already. Let's go.
It's sweater weather. I'm ready.
At least hoodie weather.
Ooh, it's 86 right now.
Yeah, it's warm.
Going up to Lansing tonight, first time in years.
Tell me about that. I'm actually happy
excited.
For you.
We're very excited.
You haven't driven through?
Oh, sure I have. Yeah, I go see my dad all the time. Oh. Well, not all the time.
You wave as you pass by?
Yeah, but I'm going to a football game, a high school football game in Lansing for the first time in, it's been a long time.
I love Friday night football.
So our coach, Coach Hodum, is being honored at halftime tonight.
Tell us a little bit. We've heard his name over the years. How many years did he coach, and how many players over those years?
So he I did a deep dive into Coach Hodum the other night because I had to write the script for the intro. So like tonight when he's being honored at halftime, I wrote the script, and so I needed. Yeah. I didn't know how many years he had coached at Lansing. I knew it was a long time. It was 16 seasons. And tonight he's being honored because it is it's actually the 36th, but we couldn't get around to doing it last year. The 35th anniversary of the school's first ever championship.
But hundreds of young men, if not thousands.
I wouldn't say it's thousands, but it's definitely hundreds. And one of the things I wrote in the script was Coach Hodum is not just a head coach or a play caller. He is a mentor, and for many of the men that he coached, he is a father figure.
Yeah.
That's a direct quote from what I wrote, and I believe that. And I've been really pleased and impressed. I've got a number of former players in my phone, and I would call them. Some are out of town; they can't make it back. But those who are in town, they're like, "I wouldn't be anywhere else. I'll be there tonight," and I'm like, "Sweet," including Brian Judas Priest Wiedauer. He'll be there.
Like a class reunion.
Kind of, yeah.
For many people.
Yeah, and I know this is going to be a little bit embarrassing for him. Like, I was talking to the stadium announcer yesterday on the phone when I was leaving Channel 19. And he said, just write up whatever you want. I said, well, it's going to be short. It's going to be brief. Because he doesn't want to be out there on the field for a long period. He's not one of those guys. I mean, we're doing this for him. Because of all the things he did for us.
Put your broadcasting and journalism skills to work.
Yeah.
Make it brief.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, but I also think, we should remind everybody, hug a coach or hug a teacher today. Because it's what they do. I had the great, great pleasure of interviewing an older gentleman in Wyandotte County. And I think he coached football, basketball, all of it for, let's say, 50 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, to the point that he ended up coaching, children of the children he coached. At the time that I had the pleasure of meeting him, he was toward the end of his life. And the one thing that immediately brought a smile and tears to his eyes, not just talking about the kids, Scott, that he mentored over the years, but could remember every championship, where they were, like the last three-pointer at the buzzer. I mean, all of that stuff, I think they do it for the love of the game, but they do it for the love of the players.
Well, I was talking to Coach Hodum the other night on the phone as I was driving home from work, and I said, hey, we're all set to go. Eddie's going to pick you up. He's actually driving himself. He's like, I don't need to be picked up. And he goes, at one point in the conversation, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said, why are you guys doing this? Aww. And I go, are you kidding? And he goes, I don't need to be recognized.
Yeah.
And I go, we want you to be recognized. I said, I was being serious with him. And I think he started to get a little teary-eyed because he goes, cut it out. You're making me cry. I said, do you have any idea? And this is the beauty of people who coach, right? I said, do you have any idea the impact you've made on so many lives? And he goes, huh? And I go, are you kidding or are you being serious? And he goes, I just love the sport. I love you guys. I loved coaching you guys.
Yeah.
I said, you have no idea the impact you've had on so many lives.
And you also recognize, Scott, I know you do, the family things in his own family that I don't want to say he missed,
sure,
but dinners at home and, because he's out coaching practices, games, all of it. You know, a lot of coaches will tell you that that was my passion. That was family. Just like my family is my family, that was family. And so some of those things get pushed to the side.
Yeah, no doubt. His wife, she sadly passed 2 years ago, Janie Hodum. She knew the name of every player he ever coached. Every single one. She was as involved with the football team as he was. And so anyway, it's just, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing a bunch of old faces that I haven't seen in a long time.
Going to put the pads back on.
You're going to wear your letter jacket?
Well, so, okay. It's,
oh, yeah.
No, wait,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
No. The letter jacket doesn't fit anymore, but it is in the basement. I still have it. And I still have my jersey. Yes, it hangs
you
in my
wear it.
No, I'm not going to wear the jerseys back in the 80s, if you'll recall.
Midriff.
Were midriff.
Oh, God.
So,
do it.
No.
Please wear it.
No.
Please show navel.
No.
You look like you were copying Dana's Hooters costume.
But right? But it's weird that you mentioned, are you going to put the pads back on? You know how you can, things that you're thinking about actively, you incorporate into your dreams at night?
Yeah.
I had a dream the other night that not enough kids went out for the Lansing High School football team, and they came to some of us alum and asked us if we would suit up.
Oh, man.
And we did, and we were terrible because we're old and our knees don't work anymore.
Glory days, right?
Yeah,
there.
No.
You're going to get there tonight. You're going to smell the grass of the field, and you're going to be like, hey, guys, you wanna suit up?
You got one more.
You got one more. One more play.
Give
not
me
a game,
break.
But a play.
No, give me a break.
Till some 300-pound lineman, 17 years old
from Mar Hill and Atchison,
falls on you.
Yeah, right. Good grief. No, thank you. But anyway, yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's gonna be a nice night, and he's a man who deserves the honor, and I look forward to it. Story here from the New York Post. The Ohio mother of the 8-year-old girl who went viral last month after driving herself 10 miles to Target.
I don't like that she went viral for that, but we'll come back to that.
Has revealed just how her daughter was able to sneak out and buy $400 worth of toys and makeup.
Do you think there's something else going on there?
You think?
I'm just saying.
Tangie Wilson telling the New York Times that she found it, quote, impressive. That her third grader, Zoe, stole her keys, her ID, her wallet, her dog, and an SUV for a joyride that resulted in no accidents and that the girl was not punished for the dangerous exploit. Let me read that last line. The 8-year-old was not punished.
By the parent?
Correct.
And are you surprised by that? Because I am not.
Tangie Wilson, who is a hairdresser, said that she was asleep when Zoe was cruising and swerving on the road to the Target that is roughly 10 miles from the family's home in Bedford, Ohio. The mother said that on the morning of September 15th, she had woken up, seen to it that Zoe was playing with her iPad on the couch, and went back to sleep. But little did she know that Zoe, after a fight with her sister, hopped in her mom's 2020 Nissan Rogue with the family dog Bear in tow for an early morning jaunt to Target.
10 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Through what we assume is like the suburbs, city, that's like a 30-minute drive.
Well, with traffic.
Yeah.
But it was in the middle of the night. Zoe did have a receipt for $400 worth of goods that she charged on her mom's card. Let me ask you this question. At what point does the woman, unless she went through self-checkout, does the person at the checkout say...
I think the person at the checkout probably thought... Mom let her run in to buy some items. Now, the issue with the $400, I don't know how to
score that. This was in the middle of the night.
Want to buy a sixer as well, kid?
You like Bartles and James?
Yeah.
Is it possible that this was a ploy to get clicks?
Ooh.
Oh.
Because why do I feel like there's a reality TV show coming or, you know... Someone is going to try to cash in on their 15 minutes of fame. I'm asking. I don't know.
This happened in Ohio, right?
Yep, Bedford, Ohio.
Remember the bubble boy?
Yep.
Where the family and he went up in the quote balloon, but he wasn't up there, and the whole world stopped what they were doing to see what was happening with this child. And he wasn't in the balloon. And then they go to do an interview and he goes, well, you told me not to talk about that because I was never in any danger. You remember that?
Yep, I do.
It all came unraveling.
Yeah, when was that?
What was that family's name? The Hemmys or the... It's on the tip of my tongue. But I'm just saying this would not be the first time that a child's, quote, bad behavior ended up with some sort of payday for mom or dad.
I'll have to look it up. I'm trying to remember. There's a movie called Bubble Boy.
You all have just jaded me. And like when I started the show, I was like, oh my gosh, that poor child was in the middle of the night. Now I'm like, all right, who's getting paid? What was this? Is there a GoFundMe?
Well, it's a healthy way to live.
You have ruined my positive outlook on life.
No, I haven't. What I've done is expose you to the fact that not everything in life is as it seems.
The Balloon Boy hoax was in October of 2009. Balloon Boy.
Was their name Hemis?
Heaney. Richard and
how do you remember this stuff?
I don't know. I've got a weird brain that collects crappy news facts.
It was in Fort Collins, Colorado.
That's right.
And they claim that their 6-year-old
son, Q's amazed. Falcon, look at that.
Falcon was his name.
Yeah, was trapped inside.
There's a red flag.
Wow.
Could have told you at Falcon that kid went in the balloon. That was one of the funniest ways that any conflict has ever unraveled in a public way, because they were on, I think, CNN.
It was. Wolf Blitzer was filling in for Larry King on Larry King
Live.
Tell
me what happened.
Asked why he was hiding by Wolf Blitzer, Falcon said to his dad on camera, you guys said that we did this for the show.
Yep. It's like when you take your kid to the buffet and you say, tell her she's 11 years old. Don't say you're 12. Tell them you're 11. And then you get up to pay for the buffet and they're like, is anyone under the age of 12? And they go, no, I'm not supposed to tell you that. I'm supposed to say I'm 11.
By the way, the dad, Richard Heaney, was sentenced to 90 days in jail, ordered to pay $36,000 in restitution.
Yeah.
Mom,
we scrambled fighter jets for that. Do you not remember that?
National Guard helicopters,
yes.
For sure, yes. Following the incident, though, the Heaney family has maintained their innocence, claiming that they were pressured into a guilty plea under the threat of Mayumi Heaney's, that's the wife, deportation.
Coming up on the 15th anniversary. October 15th.
Yeah, in 4 days, it'll be the 15th anniversary.
Okay.
We'll have to celebrate.
913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. Story here from Channel 5, and it involves that shooting that was just east, 2 blocks east of the Westport Entertainment District the other night, but still within the Westport District. Got Hair, that's the name of a business, Got Hair. Got Hair, located on Westport Road, is the salon that is located downstairs from where the shooting happened Wednesday that injured 4 adults and a juvenile. Erin Fedor Motes has owned the shop since 2022. She gave Ring camera footage from the incident to Channel 5. It shows her stylist and customer, who is an off-duty police officer, running towards the back of the shop when the shots were fired. Says Fedor Motes, they were able to stay safe. She, the officer, was the one that went out there to retrieve the gun. She put on a glove and went out there and got the gun off the street. The business across the street from the shooting, Pop Vintage, was hit by multiple bullets, causing them to board up the windows with plywood. Quoting here from Fedor Motes, we couldn't walk certain places. I mean, there was just so much blood. This wasn't the first situation we've had with the business upstairs. Hopefully it is the last. But at this point, all I can do is ask myself, how can I guarantee my staff's safety? How can I guarantee my clients' safety? The Kansas City Police Department said they have made progress in the case and that investigation so far has shown the shooting was connected to a dispute between several individuals. Fedor Motes has been wondering whether or not to renew her lease, although she loves the location.
Spending the night in a business to make sure no one steals from it.
Is that what some people are doing?
Keep reading. A handful of business owners have been staying the night inside of their businesses.
Oh, yeah, here it is. From the lady who owns the store across the street, Gilded Chaos. I know business owners that are sleeping in their stores right now to try to deter break-ins because they can't afford to fix their windows. This is how bad it is right now. Wow. Sleeping in your business? to make sure it doesn't get broken into?
So, you know, Sam pointed out yesterday, and I understand this, that the latest shooting, which, by the way, wasn't even like late at night.
It was 8 o'clock.
It was at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. Wasn't in the heart of the entertainment. It wasn't like in the bar corridor.
Right. It was two blocks to the east.
Yeah. And I remember thinking at the time, if you think that makes me feel better about what's going on down there, that that was two blocks to the east, five people shot, one teenager, four adults, multiple in critical, you've lost your mind. And my heart breaks for the business owners. I don't know what the answer is. I know the city is well aware that this is going on, and not just in Westport, but in Waldo and Brookside. I told you this. I sent a text to the kids, and I said, until they can get a handle on this, we're done.
With Westport?
We're done with Westport.
Really? How'd that go over?
I did not get a reply back from one of them, and one of them replied, Mama, I agree.
Yeah.
And here's what you have to remember with the crime issue that has to be addressed. You see the headlines when there are five people shot, and you see the headlines or you see it on the news when someone sadly, horrifyingly is killed. Mm-hmm. Okay? What you do not see are all of the non-fatal shootings that do not make the headlines. Huh. And that number should scare the hell out of everybody. And I've always said, if we could somehow round up the non-fatal shooters, the bad actors, the homicide problem would take care of itself. But I think even police and to some extent the prosecutor's office will tell you that when those shootings happen that we don't even hear about, or all we would be doing would be reporting on non-fatal shootings, there's what, 600 a year?
What do you mean the homicide problem would take care of itself?
Because the people who are missing and not killing people when they're firing
the same
shots
who are, hitting?
Are the same people that end up hitting somebody and killing them. Hmm. Yes. If you got all of the non-fatal shooters off the streets, I do believe the homicide number would vastly go down. The problem is when people survive those shootings, no one will talk.
And those people who were shot sometimes seek revenge.
And if they don't, they're not being cooperative with police.
Right. 913-586-7798. Business owners, according to one Westport shopkeeper, business owners are now sleeping in their stores? Huh? To deter people from breaking in. Wow. There's even one business owner in Brookside. We talk about this on Week in Review tonight on KCPT, who is calling on the governor to send in the National Guard to Brookside. That's going to go over like a lead balloon in some neighborhoods. 913-586-7798. 586-7798. Quentin Morris, Dana Wright, my name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. We're talking about the shooting in Westport that occurred Wednesday, I want to say evening, not even Wednesday night, Wednesday evening. At about 8 o'clock, five people were wounded in this shooting. Apparently, it was at a business or an apartment above another business just two blocks east of the actual entertainment district in Westport. Three of those shot are in critical condition. One of them is a juvenile. And police are making progress in their investigation, but so far there have been no arrests. But it was deeper down into the story, Dana found this, where one of the business owners nearby confessed to Channel 5 that she has been sleeping in her business overnights to protect her business because she is concerned that people are going to try to break in or break the windows or steal something from her business. I mean, have we come to this? Have we come to this? And then, you know, as I mentioned before, there's a story going around that at least one business owner in Brookside who spoke, I think, with Channel 4 earlier this week, is suggesting and asking the governor to send in the National Guard to Brookside.
But that's not the first time we've heard that.
No, it's not.
Over the years in Kansas City with the homicide problem and certainly the violence, just the violence problem.
How do you think that would go down? I mean, you know, and Eric Wesson is on Week in Review this week and very prominent black activist here in Kansas City. And he said, isn't it weird that when there's a crime issue or trouble west of Troost?
His point is taken, Scott.
I know, and I agreed with him on this.
His point is taken.
When there's crime and businesses are having trouble west of Troost, people want to bring in the National Guard. But when it's east of Troost, nobody seems to care.
I think people do care. There's just no, it is such a multifaceted problem. And we've been dealing with it for so long in the city. I think it's not that people don't care. They say, what do we do?
But why does Boston have only 10 murders?
Scott, I'm telling you right now, every city in America with this type of crime problem needs to figure out what the hell they're doing in Boston.
I'm going to look it up.
The numbers are stunning.
This is October. I believe it was in September, early September, when we reported that Boston at that time, 9 months into the year, had only 10 homicides. A city much larger than Kansas City.
That has had its own problems.
Paul in Shawnee. Paul, hello.
Hey, guys. Was listening here, and you guys were just talking about the shop owner that confessed to sleeping in her shop to protect her goods. I called this out maybe 3 weeks ago. My wife and I were watching the news, and I said, you watch. People are going to start sleeping in their shops, and they're going to be armed, and sure enough, kids are going to be breaking through the front door, or people are going to be breaking through the front door, and they're going to end up dead or hurt. It's unfortunate that a shop owner has to do that to protect his own property. Usually we rely on the local authorities to do that, but apparently they're overwhelmed. And I was just listening to what you guys were saying about Boston. We need to figure out what they're doing there, and we need to try and implement that here in the Kansas City area.
Well,
I reached out to the police department after we first heard those numbers, because honestly, the first time you told me about Boston, I was like, that can't be right. I mean, there's no way that's right.
Mm-hmm.
We reached out to the police department and said, hey, like, are you reaching out to Boston? And I got a very nice sort of generic reply that anytime we see positive trends in other cities that you know, we are monitoring, and, you know, it was just kind of, yeah, Dana, go away. I think we should be sending people to Boston, Scott, city leaders, prosecutors, like, let's send them.
It's, you know, 17, we hear about, it's currently 17. I just counted
17.
17 in 10
And where
10
does
months.
Kansas City stand?
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yes.
So do you think any of this has to do with the fact that Kansas City doesn't directly control its police department?
No.
Or?
That has been an argument as old as time. I don't know what the answer is, Quentin. I wish I did. I don't think anybody knows what the answer is.
Kansas City so far, more than 100.
And Boston is at?
17.
17.
Yeah.
How does that happen? Because Boston did not used to be at 17. If you even go back 4 years, 5 years, and I'll look, Scott, what were their numbers? And what are they saying they're doing? That is such a dramatic drop.
It's shocking. And let me look up how many people live in Boston. Because keep in mind, there's just under 500,000 in the city of Kansas City, Missouri.
In the city proper, though.
Proper, of course. The metro is 2.7 million. But in Kansas City, Missouri, it's just under 500,000. The city of Boston has a population of 650,000. That is the city proper. 650,000 in the city. The metro, I can only imagine.
Their mayor is calling Boston America's safest major city.
Can you disagree
with that.
No. 17 murders so far. I literally just counted them one by one. Let's go to Steve in Overland Park. Hello, Steve.
Hi. I was just wanting to, I read an article in the Wall Street Journal this week about Chicago. The mayor is wanting to cancel the acoustic contract with this company that monitors gunshots. When a shot is
the shot spotter.
But anyway, yeah, that's what it is. But anyway, They detected 200,000 gunshots last year in Chicago and notified the police. But the mayor wants to do away with it. The city council wants to keep it. He said he's going to veto it. But can you imagine 200,000 random gunshots going on in Kansas City? Maybe we need to get a spot shotter here.
We have it, Steve. We have it.
I was not aware.
We do. And I've made the argument that is, I think it's one tool, and I think it could be an important tool.
But it's reactive.
Yeah. The shot spotter alerts police after the shots have been fired.
The only thing
Boston has somehow figured out how to stop the shots from being fired.
Yeah. The only thing the shot spotter does is it alerts police to roughly the area where shots were fired before somebody has to call 911. So it gives them a leg up, if you will, on maybe catching whoever it was, because you just chase a speeding car flying away. By the way, as of the end of last month, and keep in mind we're 11 days into this month, at the end of last month, there had been 167 murders in the Kansas City metropolitan area. Hang on. So that's not Kansas City, Missouri necessarily. As of late June of this year, there had already been 100 murders in Kansas City, Missouri alone. Let's go to Nathan in Chillicothe. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. So a little bit of, I don't know, it's a lot of reading on my part. And Dana kind of touched on it just briefly. They stop the shots before they happen, and they do it with community action programs. They address the kids before they choose to go down the wrong path of a life of violence and crime and those things.
But we have those programs, Nathan. We have so many community engagement programs. Other cities do.
Then they're not effective. They need to figure that out, because that is precisely the difference, is their communities are involved. And they have great programs to educate kids and the public about crime and violence and those things. They stop it before it starts. That's why they're just far more effective at it than what we have here, period. There's no other answer.
So one of the things they did, and this is from the mayor, so take that, you know, is they have encouraged law enforcement in Boston and public health workers to revive a collaborative approach. Clergy, everybody's involved, right? All hands on deck. The administration has mined historical crime data to pinpoint 150 micro locations across the city, as specific as a single intersection where violence has flared in the past and where custom designed interventions have outsized impacts.
What does that mean?
It means they looked at 150 specific locations, and I'm not going to name street corners here, but the police department would know historically where these areas are, and then you start there, you start small, and flood community resources to those spots.
When it comes to, this is according to this website I'm looking at, Kansas City, Missouri, per capita is the seventh deadliest city in America when it comes to murders. Seventh deadliest. You hear in the news all the time, and one of the previous callers was mentioning Chicago. And a lot of people like to point to Chicago, point to Chicago as this, you know, Wild West, everybody's killing everybody kind of city. Kansas City, per capita, has more murders than Chicago.
Boston is a place where 40% of violent crime happens on 4% of city streets. And I bet you ours is even a wider swing than that, Scott.
I would agree.
40% of violent crime in Boston happens on 4% of the area in that city. Mm-hmm. And where a very small number of people drive a significant part of the violence. The same can be said here.
Correct.
Police would even say a very small number of bad actors are driving the murders in our town.
913-586-7798. 913-586-7798. Don't forget, we're about an hour away from Festivus Friday. It is brought to you by Q39. Get your Q fix today at Q39KC.com. A week from tomorrow is the fourth Dana and Parks Cornhole Tournament. All proceeds go to benefit the Casey Pet Project. It is a wonderful, wonderful program. You can register your team, and we have a limited number of slots by going to kmbz.com. It's going to be held at Serve in Overland Park from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Again, it's a week from tomorrow, but you got to get in early. Go to kmbz.com to register your team. Sean in Warrensburg, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I think we're looking for a silver bullet, and it's a multifaceted approach. I think everything we've talked about so far should be on the table. I think one of the keys is for us to build relationships. You have to have meaningful relationships and be able to come to the table and understand each other so that those relationships can be built. We need more citizens like Rosalind Temple, Alvin Brooks, to come to the table, just like them, who can reach out to different parties and settle disagreements so that we can all end things peacefully. I think we also need to look at, and I think looking at the per capita of the cities, the populations is good, but when you talk about you're able to pinpoint the hundreds of specific intersections, I ask, what is the ratio of the police force per capita of Boston versus Kansas City? Do they have more boots on the ground, as they say? Is that part of the solution as well? I think that's probably it. And I think the other thing is criminal justice. You know, you don't want to go into, what is it, Platte County and face Eric Zahn. Everybody knows that. But no one is talking about Jean Peters Baker, no offense to her, or Jackson County. I think it's a multifaceted approach. And you have to look at it from all angles. There's no silver bullet.
Sean, it's a good call, man. Do appreciate
it. Thank you for it.
By the way, I mentioned that Kansas City was number 7 per capita for the number of murders in the United States. Here are the 6 that are more deadly. Las Vegas, Nevada, number 6. Number 5, Cleveland, Ohio. Number 4, Detroit. Number 3, New Orleans. Number 2, Baltimore, Maryland. Number 1. St. Louis, Missouri.
Not surprised.
Sean in Kansas City, we've got less than a minute. Can you do it?
Yes, I can. So I'm originally from the Boston area. I grew up there. Honestly, I think another one thing that hasn't really been mentioned yet is where Boston is located versus Kansas City. Boston and Massachusetts, where Boston is, acquiring weapons such as handguns is a much more regulated process where you need to get a Class A license. You need to be able to basically pass certain tests, fulfill certain requirements before you can even acquire stuff like a handgun. Whereas, like right now in Missouri, I could just, as long as I'm 21 and I pass my federal background check, I can pick up a handgun the same day.
All right, Sean, got to stop you there, man. Do appreciate the call. Thank you very much. We are 1 hour away from Festivus Friday. It is brought to you by Q39, the airing of the grievances right after 5 o'clock here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.